Welcome to another episode of the On Earth podcast. I am your host, Samantha Tuttle. This is an interview that I have been looking very forward to sharing with all of you because I get to introduce you to Dr. Kathleen King, founder and owner of an organization called Primal Trust. Primal Trust, it's an online community designed to help those dealing with chronic illness to rewire our brains through neuroplasticity and regulate our nervous systems and to heal from a variety of illnesses and symptoms. A few years ago, I discovered Dr. Kat after trying everything under the sun to heal from my own chronic illness. I had been exposed to high levels of toxic mold, which caused other nasty viruses like Lyme disease and others to come out of remission. And so together, all of that stuff just really tanked my immune system, and it caused multi-organ and multi-system damage throughout my body. And Dr. Kat's program was a game changer in my recovery. And I'm just so glad she was able to sit down with me so that I can share with you what Primal Trust is all about. So if you or someone you know is struggling to heal from a chronic illness, Dr. Kat's work is definitely worth looking into. Links to everything are in the show notes, and I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Hi, Dr. Kat. Thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited to have a time to chat with you and kind of get to know you a little bit better and see kind of where our conversation goes. So thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So I went back and I looked at sort of the timeline over the last about 5 years of my life that I've sort of been going through this journey, this health journey. And I was sort of looking at the timeline, and it looks like I reached out to you in April of 2021, which meant I had been struggling for about 2 years before I even reached out to you. My story is very familiar to many of the stories that you've heard in the past. I was dealing with mold toxicity, Lyme disease, Epstein-Barr, pneumonia, the list goes on and on, POTS. I had symptoms. I could probably fill a page, a single space page with all of the symptoms that I had. And I, about 2 years in, here, of course, my dog decides to come in here just now, so I'm going to lock her out here. Go ahead. Thank you. Sweet. Perfect timing. So I remember I was about 2 years into my recovery and nothing was helping. Nothing was working. I was super sensitive. I was overreacting to everything and I was getting really frustrated. I started with another very popular brain retraining program, and I'd worked on that off and on for about a year, and it just wasn't a good fit. And I think that's what led me to reach out to you, because I was like, okay, this is something else. Maybe this would be a better fit. And I distinctly remember I was listening to an interview by Neil Nathan. I don't know if you remember him or not. He wrote a book called Toxic, and he started describing me. He started describing the people who are ultra sensitive, who overreact and yada, yada, yada. And I was like, that's me. That's me. And he started talking about brain retraining and neuroplasticity. I was like, yeah, I've tried it. It's not working. And then he started talking about vagus nerve exercise. And so this is around the time when I had reached out to you. So I didn't know that your program and Neil Nathan were talking about essentially the same thing. And so I went and I got your program. It was called Creating Calm at the time, and it's now called Regulate. It's all under the umbrella of Primal Trust, which I want to go into here in a minute. But for somebody who has no idea what in the world we're talking about right now, about neuroplasticity, about brain retraining, can you sort of give a brief overview of sort of what in the world is this and how can it help people who have been dealing with chronic illness for years and maybe they're just at the end of their rope, they've tried everything and nothing's working?
Sure. Such a good question. So typically by the time somebody is dealing with a chronic illness or chronic symptoms of whatever, even like chronic anxiety and mental health challenges, their nervous system has gotten to a point where it is in a constant stress response of some sort. Now, sometimes you don't feel the stress. Sometimes you just feel shut down. You almost might feel numb. In fact, some people are like, I'm not even stressed, I'm just numb. But the point is that when you've had constant symptoms or constant different emotional and mental challenges, our nervous system gets habituated into sending stress chemistry through our body. our brain, our limbic system gets habituated to expecting stress, trauma, resistance, fear, all sorts of things. And that becomes a habit in our brain and our body. Now, in order to heal, in order to have symptoms go away, whether they're physical or mental, we have to come into a state of parasympathetic activity. Parasympathetic is one of the branches of our nervous system that's responsible for rest and repair. How do you come into parasympathetic if you are in a chronic stress response and you're always reacting to things, or there's always something bad happening, or you don't even know why? Well, that takes a little bit of conscious effort to turn the brain into being able to interpret life differently, which is brain retraining, rewiring the way our brain is interpreting our information or sensing threat. And it also takes conscious effort to reroute the way our nervous system is responding, our vagus nerve, and just the nervous system as a whole. So we're focusing on the brain and the nervous system and teaching it to teaching it to find safety, to have a perception of safety. Even if your whole life you haven't been able to find safety, it's possible through the field and the practices of neuroplasticity and nervous system healing to find safety, which is that parasympathetic response. And once we find safety, we have innate self-healing that can happen, but we have to find safety first. We have to get out of that fear response. And then even more than that, I also think that we have to get in touch with our essence, our heart, our sense of self. So I think it's twofold. It's safety and it's connection with ourself, with source, with earth, with whatever you want to call that. So that's really the pathway of healing that I take people on.
Your program comes sort of out of you trying all the others. You tried everything. Like you did all their programs, and you just sort of put together something that sort of worked for you. Can you spend a few moments sort of telling or painting a picture of what led to your personal rock bottom and then that journey of finally moving towards healing and wholeness?
Sure. Often there's so many people out there that get sick and they try to find something to fix them, to heal them. And often they go from doctor to doctor, program to program, diet to diet, book to book, trying to get better. Some people get better, but some don't. Who is it that doesn't get better? Well, typically, if you are running from program to program with that chronic stress response of, oh my gosh, something's wrong, I've got to figure this out, I've got to fix this, and you're rapidly reading everything and type A, figuring it all out, and type A, going through your diets and all the things. Well, I'm sorry, but you are doing these healing protocols with a chronic stress response. And I found after well over a decade of doing everything and spending tens of thousands of dollars and literally seeing the best Lyme mold doctors in the country and not getting better, it was a dark moment for me because I couldn't fix myself. The smartest doctors couldn't fix me. I had tried everything ranging from medicine to shamanism to everything you can think of. And I was like, what am I doing wrong? And in that moment, I realized that I was kind of in this habituated, frantic stress response, but doing all of the right things all day. And I'm like, this isn't working. I can't fix myself. And I went through a grief almost of like, I failed. I can't fix myself. So all I can do is maybe learn how to be here in this life and find some love, find some joy with my life as it is because I can't fix myself. And it was a dark, quiet moment because I was literally in a dark, quiet room because I couldn't tolerate noise and sound and hardly any movement at that time.
That little kid.
But I had to start. Yeah. And I had two little kids, two very young kids at the time, ages, 4 and 5-ish about at that time. It's hard when you feel like you failed and nobody can help you. That's a really hard moment. But what was the one thing I didn't do? I never relaxed. I never surrendered. I never found safety, even for a second. And fortunately, I had some training as a physical therapist working with chronic pain. which I didn't have at the time. I had other issues, and understanding that the brain needed to come into a state of safety to regulate the chronic pain response. And so I thought, well, what if the brain needs to come into safety to regulate this infection response or toxic mold response or parasite? And, because all my doctors were like, you got to kill, you got to detoxify. And they might have whispered, calm down in there, but I didn't hear it because all I heard was the lab tests and the protocols. And it completely skipped my mind. In that moment, I'm like, this is the one thing I haven't done. I haven't found calm and safety. I haven't really focused on resolving my trauma and anxieties in this way. And so that was the moment a light kicked on. And I said, I'm going to start focusing on the brain and its ability to find safety. And then I did a bunch of research, and sure enough, other people were healing with limbic system retraining and nervous system work with the kind of infections and illnesses I had. And I'm like, this is it. It's all about first stage coming into safety, and second stage, you know, like, well, there's deeper stuff. There's safety, there's connection to yourself, and then there is resolving relationship trauma and things like that. But the initial stage was, I need to find safety, because from there, your intuition comes back on. And when your intuition is there, you can actually be guided in with the modalities that are going to help you.
Do you feel like it seems that more often than not, there's some kind of a catalyst or a pivotal event that happens in a person's life that sort of makes the whole house of cards fall? Because I feel like I was functioning fine for years. And then when I sort of go back to my timeline and kind of see, like, when did things really start to go downhill? And it was my grandmother's death. I was with her when she died. I officiated her funeral. And so I have a theory, like, for most people, is there usually like something that is like breaks everything open and causes like the final crumble, so to speak?
Yeah. Absolutely. Our body can function with dysfunction for quite a while, meaning you probably had a chronic stress response under, you know, as a personality in some way. And then some big event happens. Sometimes it's an accident. Sometimes it's literally a intense relationship. Sometimes it's a big loss, or sometimes it's a really stressful job. But there's something where it's too much for your nervous system to actually handle and process anymore. Like, you've kind of filled up your bucket as far as what your nervous system can handle. And that event caused the bucket to overflow. And it's almost like our subconscious just goes into like collapse, freeze, shut down, whatever. There's just a time where we can't keep our detoxification, immune, endocrine system in enough harmony to get by. And I think that that event is often something that's just too much for us to fully process at the time, often mimicking maybe a trauma that we had as a child that was too much to process at a time. And it's almost like it opens up the can of worms of a dormant pattern that is now made very active in our system. That's how it was for me. I had a dormant trauma pattern that became activated with a mirroring event of some sort. They had a similar energy that I couldn't fully process and be with. And next thing I know, my body was very confused. My immune system went off. I'll say it almost went offline, and I started getting all these infections. My nervous system went into like freeze, and I couldn't detoxify it. It just became that toxic soup where you're not fighting off things. You're not detoxifying. You're not digesting well. You're probably not sleeping well. Your relationships start to fall apart. And from there, it's just a downward spiral until you can start getting some footing again, get some basic regulation, and pull yourself out of that nosedive.
Makes so much sense. So much sense. One of the things I loved about Primal Trust was how all-encompassing it was. It wasn't just the brain retraining piece. You have so many other things in the program besides the brain retraining. Can you sort of talk a little bit about what sets Primal Trust apart from everything else? Because I think the other pieces of the puzzle that you include in Primal Trust and Creating Calm, that was what turned things around for me. That's what helped. That's what it was. That was a game changer.
Mm-hmm. I wish that it was always just one simple tool that did the trick for everybody, but unfortunately it's not, especially if you have a history of attachment wounding, meaning poor relationships as a child, or trauma, or some type of high stress current situation. Maybe you have a child with high needs or a very dysfunctional relationship, et cetera, meaning you have multiple factors influencing your nervous system, and typically one tool isn't going to hit at all. You know, like people have their thing and they're like, oh, I have this tool, this program, and it's going to heal you. And I just remember, you know, using this tool, like I really started with brain retraining. I'm like, this is a great tool and it's calming down a certain aspect of what's going on and it's alleviating some of my symptoms, but it's not actually helping me be in my body during the moment of a relationship trigger where I can't go away and uplift my mood. I have to sit with discomfort and hold steady in a storm. So I knew that this tool was limited for me. And I knew enough about trauma healing and somatics because of being a physical therapist that I was going to need to add in other tools, other practices as I held steady. Now, the key is, though, is sequencing with different tools. And I would say I have a gift, and my gift is pattern recognition, where I can see patterns in what helps people. I see patterns in different programs, and I see patterns in sequencing really well. And so early on, I kind of intuited that there was going to be once I got on the right track of not having something outside of me fix me and starting to take responsibility to rehabilitate my nervous system and to repair my relationships, I knew that there's no way I'm going to repair this relationship if I can't even hold steady with my own emotions, let alone my child's or my partner. So I knew step one was me in my own nervous system tools, but I knew that I had to go on a journey of repairing my relationships. In order to repair relationships, you've got to work on your own trauma, because it's your trauma, your memories of your trauma that are being mirrored in your relationships. So I knew I was going to have to add in some trauma work into the program. I knew I was going to have to add in somatics and vagus nerve toning so that people could access the trauma in their body and start to process it, which means basically being able to feel it, acknowledge it, and actually let it move through your whole body, almost like hugging it and holding it so that the charge diffuses. Once you can do that, then you can hold steady a little more with someone else. Then you can actually connect with somebody else and be able to diffuse things together. And that's what has to happen with relationship alchemy or relationship healing. But it's very sequential. And it might start with the simple tool of breathing, then brain retraining, some vagus nerve toning, some somatics, some trauma processing, maybe even figuring out who you are and what you love, your connection to source, and then you kind of bring those things further.
So a science question, what worked for me, one of the biggest things that worked for me were the vagus nerve exercises. I remember one of my biggest symptoms that, and I was never like this. And so when it started happening, it lasted for years. And it just seemed to come out of nowhere. It was this feeling as if I had drank 100 cups of coffee and my body was hooked to a battery. It's the worst feeling. And I remember I started doing these very simple eye exercises, these vagus nerve exercises. And I would say within a week, that symptom dissolved. It just disappeared. Why did that work? Like, what happened to my body? Why is moving my eyes in a very strategic manner back and forth leads to that particular, like, what happened? Like, why did that work? Like, help me understand science from a science perspective. Why did that work?
So one of the things about Primal Trust is we have this magic tool that we call eye yoga or functional neurology exercises. And it's one of the things that sets my program apart from other programs. And it's actually a practice I used to use 20 years ago with people post-car accident. I would give them these eye exercises to help their whiplash or their like absolute lockdown response come out of lockdown. And there's several reasons for that. The eyes are connected to the back of, to muscles in the back of our neck. It connects basically with our cervical spine, our ability to move. We have all these cranial nerves that are coming through the same area. So it helps to regulate some of the processing and functioning of the cranial nerves. Your eyes are actually part of your brain. So you're actually targeting your brain And what I believe happens is, in addition to targeting the vagus nerve, which runs through that same complex, and that's going to have all sorts of feedback to the body, I think this is a theory, okay? This is, I don't know. The eye exercises, to me, it's almost like it starts to run the energy of our body. It's almost like you say, the wiring is like all offline. It's like short circuiting. The eye exercises, to me, it's almost like it starts running the energetics through the body in a more coherent, directional way. And I don't know exactly why that is, but that's how it was for me. When I started doing the eye exercises, I could tolerate light and sound and input. And it was almost like the energy that was overwhelming my nervous system started to run through my body, down my legs, like down my grounding cord and into the earth. I don't know how to mix the science with the woo-woo there, but I do know that it happens from a very brain level, though. It's targeting the brain, targeting your cervical spine, it's targeting your vagus nerve because it's all connected, and you're creating, the eye exercises help you to create coherent communication with these different structures in the brain. And what you're describing is incoherent communication when your electrical field was all out of whack. That's incoherent communication. The vagus nerve is all about heart-brain coherence, coherent communication between the heart and the brain, which regulates the nervous system of our whole body. So the specifics, I don't know. I'm not that level of a scientist. I just know as a physical therapist, I saw the absolute miracles that happen with car accidents, and now working with chronic illness and trauma, I see it as well. I mean, if you think of a lot of trauma processing, they use EMDR therapy, which is eye movement therapies or brain spotting eye movements. So eye movements have been used for a long time to help us process charged emotions stuck and lodged in our body and our brain. So yeah, there's a little bit of mystery to it, but it works. It's one of my most popular tools. It's so easy to do.
Yeah.
So easy to do with your children, by the way. So, you know, for those of you who are looking for exercise for your children in our Primal Trust program, we have these very simple eye exercises that people can start using right away. And that's one thing I'd recommend.
So fascinating. I geek out over it. It's so cool. I want to switch gears and talk a minute about wonder and awe, because that's one of the central themes of this podcast. Is I believe that being intentional about seeking out wonder and awe in our daily lives can really help us connect to the beingness that is within me, recognize the beingness that is within you, kind of dissolve the veil of separation between the two. There's a lot of science behind wonder and awe. I've been studying the work of Dacher Keltner. He studies wonder and awe. And I want to read this quote to you because I really think this fits into, because Primal Trust, you have different levels, level one, level two, level three. I'm waiting on level four because, you know, there's got to be a level four at that point, right? I think this really fits into the work in, you know, level two, level three, and I guess level one as well. But he says, cultivating awe is part of unlocking the truest sense of life's purpose. And I know that you weave wonder and awe into your program. And I wanted to see if, you know, can you riff on that? Can you talk about how wonder and awe has played a part in all of this? Because it's something that fascinates me as well.
It's interesting. I even have a little emotion. When I was in that really dark place and there wasn't much I could do, and I went through this surrender time of like, well, I can't fix myself and the smartest doctors can't fix me. I guess I'll just be here. I had a few experiences. I was talking about how I got myself to go lay down outside. But one of the times that I was laying down outside, I was laying down next to this lavender plant. And there were all of these bees buzzing around the lavender plant. And I'm just laying on my back. And this is like all I could tolerate. And I'm watching these bees. And then there was just this moment. And it's still so real to me. The beauty, the absolute beauty of just that moment. The sun was shining on me just the right way. The sound of the bees, watching them live, and the color of the lavender. And I was in bliss by the simple act of having to lay down by these lavender plants. And I thought, there's nothing in the world I'd rather be doing right now than this. And I can do this and experience this even with chronic illness.
Yeah.
And so if there's nothing in the world I'd rather have right now than this moment, I don't need to be any better in this moment to live a life I love. And I started to realize that nature had this natural, absolute, exquisite joy and beauty and entertainment even to offer to me. And so I started to just look for these beautiful connections with nature. And it became my daily adventure, which is one of my values, is adventure. And I started to realize living my values heals me, because every moment I'm connected with life itself, every moment that I'm so grateful to be alive, because I'm witnessing like source in action. It's like the source in me is witnessing the earth, the beauty, the creations. I felt one. I felt at one with my life force, with a reason for being alive. And in that moment, it was simply to watch these bees, and it was complete. And so there was communion.
Yeah.
There was communion. And communion, if you read any of the research on like polyvagal theory and having a safe connection, like what we're actually seeking is the repair of separation from our source, from ourselves, from our family. We're seeking communion. And that's what I experience in moments of wonder and awe. And that's when my whole the energy system of my body just seems to come into this warm flow, almost like plasma running through my body, or like warm honey. And I know when I'm in that moment, I know when I'm in coherence now, because I practiced experiencing it and looking for it and having that be what I needed. Instead of, I need this symptom gone every day, I need to experience beauty every day.
So beautiful.
That's so good.
That's amazing.
Today, you know, and I still do this. Today, I was my daughter and I were walking this morning at sunrise, and there was this bush of like a whole bunch of bees and hummingbirds, and there was all this buzzing, and I got us really close to it, and I just said, close your eyes and listen. And so we just listened for about 3 minutes, and I said, what does it feel like? And she says, I feel like I'm one of the bees. I'm like, yeah. And these are things that we can do with our children, is to help them find the simple wonder and awe in, you know, and taking the time to do that with them. It's just such a beautiful moment. And now I have that precious moment for the rest of the day. No matter what happens, I was connected today with life itself, with my daughter.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's so awesome. That's so awesome. Thank you for sharing that. That's amazing. I want to share with you, I was sort of going through my notes. I want to share with you, I think the three main things that I learned from you that completely shifted the trajectory of my life, that helped turn things around. There's an Oprah Winfrey meme. I don't know if you've seen it. It came out, I don't know, a few years ago. And I'll kind of show it to you there. And it says, my evangelical parents, why are you so scared all the time? And then it says 10-year-old me. The rapture, going to hell, angels, purity, exorcism, spiritual warfare, going to heaven, committing an unforgivable sin, demons, revelation, forced proselytizing. And I remember reading that and laughing so much. And then I immediately substituted these words. Mold, gluten, unfiltered water, pesticides, dirty electricity, EMFs, Wi-Fi routers, fragrances, air quality. Our doctors and our mold specialists, their hearts are in the right place. They really are. But when you start giving someone who is so sick a list of things that they need to panic about and be afraid about and be diligent about and avoid, it's like pouring gasoline on fire, and it just causes us to live in this state of constant fear and panic. And I have to say that, you know, I came across one of your videos. It might have been on Instagram. I don't know where it was, but you said, my only infection is fear. And I remember I saw that, and it was just like, oh, yes, that makes so much sense. Do you remember, like, that video and what you said about what your mentor said to you, and you use this analogy of kind of sitting at a round table. Do you remember that story at all?
I don't remember that story, but I do remember the moment of my only infection is fear and how it completely shifted the trajectory. Yeah.
That really shifted everything for me. And I think that's one of the big things in your program is it's how we can get so sucked into what we are afraid of and trying to avoid what we are afraid of.
Especially when we're programmed to be afraid of. Like you said, the programming of, you know, all hell is going to come down and get you if you don't do X, Y, and Z is an equal mirroring of all hell is going to happen if you don't get away from mold and blah, 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 all this stuff. It's exactly the same. And if we're used to attuning to that kind of authority figure to tell us what we need to do or not do to be safe or saved, there's a match there, and it's a perfect match for chronic.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you keep going with that? Because that was one of my questions for you is, you know, going back to that Oprah meme of a lot of people, you know, having a pastoral background, going into hospitals, visiting people who are chronically ill. I would say 9 times out of 10, they are carrying with them some childhood understanding of God that was scary, a judgmental God. God's going to get you. Don't question God. They've been told what to believe. Questioning God or asking questions is too big of a risk. I don't want to jeopardize my salvation, you know, and all of that. Are you seeing how, like, toxic religion, toxic theology plays a huge role in people's nervous system dysregulation? I know you have a background in sort of deconstructing, reconstructing, and getting out of sort of a toxic experience as well.
Yeah, 100%. Something I haven't spoken super openly about, but I'll just say I remember being 10 years old with the book of Revelations, going to my pastor saying, help me understand this so I don't end up in hell when the final war comes. Like, I was that kid where I wanted to be safe and I was literally trying to do everything right. I had a very strong religious background. But then, of course, like any, you know, not any, but like a lot of young women, I did things that I wasn't supposed to do or I was going to go to hell. And I was like, oh my gosh, so I'm really screwed. And I had this authority figure and this program, and I wanted to be a good girl, but I actually felt like I was a bad girl. And that is the perfect setup for what can often lead to chronic illness, where you've got an authority figure that is telling you, here's what you need to do to be good. And yet, because we're human, we aren't living up to it. And we're like, oh, crap, I am bad. And that creates an internal conflict inside of us. A sense of I'm bad, but I'm trying to be good. And my authority is this preacher or this parent or this teacher that's given me a standard of how I can be worthy that I'll never reach because I've already messed up. I've already messed up. I remember the moment in my teenage years, I was like, there's no hope for me now. I'm going to hell. And I never, ever, ever, ever could feel worthy again. So that's a setup that we work a lot with in Primal Trust because it mimics something. It's similar to if you listen to Freud's work about the superego. The superego inside of us is this inner command center of right and wrong. And it's constantly telling you to judge yourself and others as right and wrong, good and bad, safe or not safe. And then we get these authority figures of doctors that are well-meaning, but they're like, this is good, this is bad, this is safe, this isn't safe. You can eat this food, you can't do this, you can have this, you can't do this. And we take it to the same level as our religion of our salvation. And when that matches happen, we are scared shitless of mold, of the food, of whatever. And our ability to actually come into safety is almost impossible when we have these rules in our head that are like, if you do this, you will be sick. If you do this, you won't be saved. It's a similar rule set. And so I realized I needed to dismantle the whole thing to find safety. And I ended up leaving my religion, which caused a huge, you know, my family broke up. Like, all these things had to happen for me to heal because I had to dismantle the authority figures inside of me, constantly keeping me in fear and threat and wrong and unworthiness. And as I did that, I had to create a new set of standards of where my safety came from, a new set of standards about these infections and molds and what that could mean. Like, what if my only infection is fear, meaning that these microbes in my body are a behavior because of the way my nervous system is? And what if I could heal my infection of fear, and then maybe my immune system and detoxification system knows exactly what to do? But I'd have to get out of the paradigm that the threat is the mold and the Lyme and the whatever. I'd have to get into that the real threat is how I'm reacting to life and scared of everything. And I don't have my own sense of safety and my own sense of worth, my own sense of self-love, because I've frankly never had it. And so it was very, it was a very enmeshed pattern that I had to go through and start to create my own source connection, my own communication, my own algorithm of worthiness, if you know, that had to happen. And it's still an ongoing process. I am not enlightened in any way. I continue to find parts, oh, I've decided I was unworthy here. Is that really true? Can I restore my connection with source in this place that I've been disconnected from? And again, there's just deeper layers of healing as I go through that. I hope, does that make sense? Because there's a very abstract.
Yeah, it totally does. Really does. Are you familiar with spiral dynamics at all? That it's a great way. If you kind of think of a spiral, you kind of come back and you revisit things. But you're
okay. I didn't know the name, but yeah, I described that in
practice. And you're in a different place. You're a different person in which you were the first time around, and so you can kind of see.
Yeah,
yeah. I think that plays a role in it as well. That's amazing. Okay. The second thing that I learned from you, and this is just a mention, not really anything we need to discuss, but it really ties into the first thing about a fear. I remember you nonchalantly said something along the lines of how suddenly your liver started hurting. And I was like, oh my gosh. And you were like, yeah, totally normal. Your body is finally coming back online. Your liver is going to be in pain because it's suddenly detoxing all the stuff that it couldn't detox all this time. It's totally normal. And I just remember, like, I was getting blood tests. I was having ultrasounds on my liver and gallbladder. And I was stuck in that fear all over again because I was like, well, now what's wrong with me? You know, and, you know, your doctors and nurses and stuff, God bless them, they're amazing. But one of the things that they don't do is they don't say, this is what you can expect. Be prepared. These are some things that's going to happen. Don't freak out. It's just your body coming back online. Your body knows what it's supposed to do. You can trust your body to do what it's designed to do. And I just wanted to highlight that because that was huge for me. And then the third one, if you're familiar with the Enneagram, I am a number five, and fives are investigators, and we will dissect and research something as long as humanly possible. Research is like a bottomless black hole for us because for some reason, we believe that if we can understand it, if we can fix it, if we can figure it out, it's going to somehow provide us with a certain level of safety. And so when you started saying, stop trying to fix yourself, you know, a lot of people, they think that's so counterintuitive and they freak out and they get super offended by that. But for me, it was like, oh, it was like you wrote me a permission slip to stop that nonsense, because that's what I thought was going to get me out of this. And so can you say more about you've kind of touched on it a little bit already, but, you know, some of us are, I would say the majority of us, we get trapped in this idea that we have to fix ourselves. And there's so much information out there and there's so much to research and try to wrap our minds around and understand. And we just feel like if we can just find that missing part or piece to the puzzle, it's going to suddenly make sense and we're going to figure it out and it's all going to be gone forever. And it makes sense because we're so sick, we're so tired, it's been going on for years, we're desperate, we're in a panic, and we will do anything, just tell us what to do. And then you're like, just stop, like, stop trying to fix yourself. Can you riff on that? I could do it, but I want to hear you do it.
Yeah. That is, it's part of the paradigm we live in that, you know, you have to, our mind needs to figure it out. We get scared and a protective part of us says, oh, we need to go research and figure this out and learn. We need to learn our way out of it.
Yeah.
And we end up learning a lot of information that scares us even more. And that's what I did. And now it's interesting because I still learn. I took a long break when I had to stop learning. What I'm learning now is I've been learning about how does what I'm learning relate to my truth of nervous system work and relationship healing? And how are these things that might be happening biochemically mirror what our emotional state is? So it's not like you have to always stop learning, but you're learning with a different lens. Instead of fear of trying to fix yourself, you're learning how to connect dots and patterns and be able to make a bridge between that old world, old paradigm and new paradigm. So I learn in a different way, but for a while, stopping the research and recognizing that you do know what you need to do. If you sit down and you're like, why am I so sick? Well, where are you stressed out? Okay. What do you need to do to work on your stress? How is your relationships? How are you processing emotions? That's the work if you'd have it. How are you living a life you love? So use your mind to be thinking about things like, how can I improve my communication here? How can I calm down in this moment? How today can I live a life I love? So it's not like you need to stop using your brain, but you're using your brain for creative solutions to actually help you by the end of the day feel like your life force is enhanced. And maybe there's still of like, well, but I don't know what this means and I don't know what's going to happen. But you're feeling better. You're feeling more connected to yourself. You're feeling more grateful about your day. That's the healing, not figuring out all of the biochemistry and all of the things. And so it's just a shift in how we use this beautiful tool we have, which is our brain, which is what brain retraining is all about, using this tool in a different way to imagine creative, beautiful living situations, to become aware of patterns that are dysfunctional, and to come with, you know, to think of new ways to respond to our life versus figuring it all out, and to trust that the body has a wisdom to resolve no matter what it is, no matter what genetic SNP is active or what, you know, immune thing is high or whatever. Our body knows how to come back into balance when we are in balance. And that's the understanding and the knowledge that I think needs to be out there. So sometimes, you know, I'm now like, okay, I'm trying to learn so that I can communicate the old science, but in a new way. But initially, the learning would go from researching to self-mastery of the nervous system. Let that be your learning for a while. Then to learning how to understand your trauma and attachment wounds. Learn about that for a little while. All of those things are actually going to help your root cause, not the side effect of your root cause, which is the diagnosis and lab tests and all of that.
Yeah, that's so good. You mentioned balance several times. The last area I want to discuss is being a parent to a child with special needs. I have friends who are parents with kids with special needs, and many of them also struggle with chronic illness. You can't just walk away from your kid, you know? You have to be almost 24/7, that constant state of a non-reactive presence. And it can be exhausting, it can be really difficult, it can be extremely stressful. And I was wondering if you had any advice for these parents, and for myself. I have a child with special needs. You know, I think about, you know, people like Eckhart Tolle and like Zen Buddhist masters that I'm like, sometimes I want to go up to them and say, come here, come follow me. Let me put you in a room full of like 3-year-olds for a couple of hours and then we'll talk, you know, because they're just so chill and zen, you know, and it's easy to do when you don't have that kind of stressor in your life 24/7. And so what can we as parents do to help us? You mentioned doing some of these exercises with your kids. That can be helpful as well. But like, how can we, you know, find that balance between helping our children and finding space to take care of ourselves? Because one of the main challenges that I have is that fine line between accepting my child for who she is, but then not giving up on her and making sure I can find whatever it is that's out there that might help her. And so there's that fixing your kid piece that comes into play as well.
Yeah, this is a really such a delicate thing. And we live in a culture where we are not supported. So your first thing that you've said is, I can't step away from my child. And I'd say the first, and I heard you say that a couple times. So to me, that's one of the corner beliefs that are in there. And I would say, seeking answers for how can I step away from my child? How can I somehow attract in my life the type of societal system we used to have, which was people, multiple people taking care of each other's children? How can I bring in more support in my life? Now, that might mean letting go of some control to do that. And that might mean that there is a different level of care at those times. But that solution is like one of the first ones, because when you feel trapped, you are going to be in resistance to that situation. That is just a classic nervous system thing. So the first thing is, how can you find a way to create a life situation where you indeed do not feel trapped? Because that emotion and that energy is going to run the whole thing.
You're right.
So starting there, how can it be that when you are with your child, you are undividedly, this is what I am choosing, and this is how I'm choosing to show up and how I'm choosing to be with them, so that when you're with them, it's not a trapped time. It's a chosen time. And maybe there's a lot of other things you also could want to do, but I'm going to choose this. I'm going to choose this with my full intention. Then your ability to actually connect, to be inspired, their ability to sense that you want to be there with them is going to come online. When that comes online, then there's going to be that communion. And when that happens, the whole world shifts for both of you. Magic, wonder, and awe can open up because you want to be there. And so to me, there's a lot of tools and a lot of things you can do, but that is the initial thing. How can you basically not be a victim to the situation? That has got to be unraveled, and it needs to, it's probably something where you'll need to recruit the village in some way, or create that, or attract that into your life and take that responsibility and that leadership. So you want to know how to help your child. You help you not be resentful that you have that child. And that's the number one thing you can do, because they can sense it.
Yeah.
They can sense it. And your body healing, when you don't feel trapped, when you feel like you are creating a reality that works for you in some sort of way. And I don't know what that is for you. And I don't know, you know, exactly what that's going to be for everybody, but that's the energy that literally turns the whole thing around. You know, I think about the people who choose to go serve people who are really, really suffering. And they're not trapped with those people. They're choosing to live a lifestyle of service. Now, they probably have things in place where they have some time alone, but they, you know, live a life in service. That's, they've found that. Or you think about, like, if you read like Viktor Frankl's work, Man's Search for Meaning, and you think about the concentration camps and other types of places where people who have been in terrible situations, prisons, things like that. And they're these masterful people who have learned to not feel trapped and enslaved in their situation. That is the number one thing.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. That's really going to help a lot of my friends. Thank you for sharing that. That was really, really awesome. Dr. Kat, you are on Instagram. You're on YouTube. I think you're on Facebook. Where can people go to find out more information about Primal Trust?
Yeah, so primaltrust.org, ORG, Instagram, Primal Trust_official, YouTube, I think it's Primal Trust something or another. That's where you can find me. Lots of free information. We have a whole bunch of new webinars and ebooks coming out too that are all be free. And then of course we have a whole membership platform where you can learn all of these tools with community, with support, under primaltrust.org.
That's awesome. Yeah. Final three questions. The first one you've already answered. How are you experiencing wonder and awe? You just shared this beautiful story about, you know, with your daughter. That was amazing. Question number two, imagine that you wake up tomorrow, digital music has completely disappeared. there's no digital music, no more iTunes, no more Spotify, no more Pandora. It's all gone. Your only option is to go into like an old vintage record store that has records and CDs. What is the first album you must buy?
Oh my gosh. Vintage, huh? You know, I watched Dirty Dancing so many times as a young woman, and I danced to it. And it's where I found like my feminine essence that was like, oh no, this is bad to have these desires and this movement in my body. So I'd go get that and get back in touch with that girl that if she was free to have been herself, because I was still under the religion programming, bringing her back alive.
That's so cool. Oh, I love it. That's awesome. And then the final question. If you could go and reboot an old show, either recreate it or pick up where it left off, is there a favorite show that you had that you would love to see like recreated or pick up where you left off?
I watched Gilligan's Island religiously because I wanted to live on a tropical island and live in that paradise, which is, people who know me know I love tropical islands. So I'd probably revisit that fantasy of getting away from cold northern Michigan and getting on a tropical island.
I love it. That's awesome. Dr. Kat, it's been such a privilege. Thank you so much for being a part of this. When I was going back through my notes, I wanted to share this with you. I wrote this about a year ago, back in March. It was one of my pages of what am I rewiring towards, is one of your assignments, one of your worksheets. And I wrote, this is what I wrote. I wrote, I create a life of present moment awareness filled with wonder and awe. I inspire others to awaken to the intricacies of eternal beingness, which connects and unites everything together as one. And so I wanted to honor you and thank you for playing such a huge role, a huge part in helping that dream of mine start to come true and to come into fruition. So thank you so much for being up.
Thank you. This was a pleasure.
I'll talk to you soon.